And we're holding on page Choftes in Sota, the second line of the wide lines, middle of our Samach Beis. We started learning yesterday, Rabbi Yeshua had said in the Mishnah that there's a bunch of different types of people who are Mevale or Mechale Olam, they ruin the world. So the first one he said was Chosid Shoita, and we defined that previously as, for example, he sees a woman drowning and he claims that it wouldn't be Tzniyaskip to save her, or as Tosfos had said, he sees a kid drowning and he says, I have to take off my tefillin first. Then we started defining what Rosh Ha'orum means. So far we had two definitions. First, we had a definition where he tells the Dayan his side of the case before the other party shows up, which he's not allowed to up here, Halacha, but we talked about yesterday how he might do it in a way where the Dayan doesn't realize that he's doing it in order to get a better hearing for his case. The second possibility we had was a person who gives a poor person just enough money to get him over the threshold where now he can't take tzedakah. So now continues the Gemara. Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, so Rabbi Asi says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, here's a third one. Zamashi Eitzel Limkor Benachasim Muatim. This referred the Rosh Ha'orum would be somebody who gives advice to the Yisoimim to sell when there's a small estate. Now the Mishnah tells us in Baba Basra as follows: there's the mitzvah of Yerushim and Atorah, and when there's sons, then the sons Yarshin, and when there's not, then you have the story of Benoist Tzlafchad. Meanwhile, though, there's also a Takonas Chachamim, that if the daughters are not married yet, that there has to be Mizonis, there has to be some of the estate, has to be earmarked for their support until they're old enough to get married, and then their husbands take over supporting them. So the Mishnah describes in Baba Basra that if you have what's called Nechosim Merubin, namely there's enough to support the girls, and there's still enough for the sons to Yarshin, then very good. The sons Yarshin, they earmark part of it to take care of their sisters, and that's that. But if there's Nechosim Muatin, if there's not enough for that, then the din is that the girls' mezonos take precedence over the boys' Yerusha. So the result would be, as the Mishnah says over there, the girls will get their mezonos, the boys will have to go begging, if necessary, in order to support themselves, because they're not going to get any of the Yerusha. Now, though, you can have a case where, now the fact is, though, the Yisomim, if they go and sell those nechosim muatim, then the girls have no claim on it, because the Mishnah tells us in Gittin that we don't take from mazon ha'ishav abonos for the daughters and also for the almana herself. We don't take from nechosim mishabodim. So if we're talking about real estate over here and medina de gemara, that's all that's under a shibud, because there's no concept medina de gemara of a shibud on metalpolin. So now if they go and sell that karka, then the daughters really have no recourse. So now, suppose that somebody goes and advises these boys, you know what, go sell this property, and that way you'll get the money, and then you won't be on the hook to support your sisters. So a person who gives such advice is an example of a Rosh Ha'orum. And it would work. The fact is, if the Yisomim do go and sell before the girls come to Beis Din to demand their mezonos. So if before that the boys go and sell the property, what they sold is sold. And now it's a done deal, and now there's no shibud on metalpolin, so the money they got for it, then Beis Din has no ability to take it away from them to support their sisters. So Mela, if the Yisomim themselves do it, you could argue they're not Rishoyim for it, because, you know, listen, they're entitled maybe to look out for their own interests. But where somebody else advises them to, then he's a Rosh Ha'orum, he's a Rosh, and he's causing that Takonas Chachamim to be overridden, and he's not even gaining anything from it himself. So that's a third example. Abaya says, here's another example of a Rosh Ha'orum. Zaham also involving the dinim of Yerusha. Zaham mashi eitza limkor benachosim to Reb Shimon Gamliel, where a person gives advice to follow Reb Shimon Gamliel's opinion also as far as nechosim. The Tanya, namely, you have a Braitha, also a case of Yerusha and Baba Basra. Nechosai lechava acharecha leploini. Suppose that a person, before he passes away, he says, Reuven, before he dies, he says to Shimon, I want you to inherit my property, but it's going to be only what they call in American legal terminology, they call it a life estate. So you're only going to have it for as long as you're alive, but then it's not going to pass on to you, Yoshim, after you. Instead, after you, Shimon, die, I want it to go to Levi. So now the din is in principle, then Shimon doesn't really have a full ownership of the karka. He only has it kind of in trust for Levi eventually. So now Yorad Harishon Mocha V'Ochel, what would happen if now Shimon goes and sells some of the property and then consumes the money? Hasheni Motim Yad L'Kochas Divrei Rebbe. Then Rebbe says Shimon did not have any ability to sell that property because it was only in trust for Levi. So therefore now Levi would be entitled to go and collect it from the buyers. He has a shibud on it, and therefore he would be able to undo the sale. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel, Ma'ein Lasheni, Ela Masha Shia Rishon Bilvad, Reb Shimon Gamliel says that no, the second one, Levi, in this case, only has whatever the first one, Shimon, left over, meaning in other words that if Shimon sold it, even though he shouldn't have done that, nevertheless, Levi has no recourse. So now, again, somebody is going, and trying to override, the whole point was, Reuven wanted that eventually the estate should pass to Levi, and now this Rosh Arum, who gets involved over here, goes and causes that that's going to be overridden and that Reuven's instructions are not going to be fulfilled. So again, if Shimon himself wanted to do it, then you could argue it's not so bad, but the fact that a third party is getting involved and giving him advice to do that is wrong. And then he's a Rosh Arum as well. So the Maharal goes through over here and he explains, you have these few that we had so far, you have several more that the Gemara is going to bring. Each one of them is like being more machmir than the previous one. The first explanation, I'm matim dvar of the dayan, he's committing an out-and-out avera. The Torah clearly says, loisisa shem ashov. The second one, giving the pruta to the oni, is not a flat-out avera, but nevertheless, still, he's doing it in order to prevent the guy from getting tzedakah. And then each one is like less and less serious. With the third one, for example, you could argue, at least he's benefiting the Yisomim. They're getting something out of it. The fourth one, even more so. He's helping Shimon benefit from the estate that was left to him. And nevertheless, each one of the Amoraim, in turn, is branding him a Rosh Arum for doing that. Okay, the Gemara continues. Amar of Yosef Rachama, Amar of Sheshes. Here's another one. Zahmachria Acherim Ba'urchoysav. Another example of a Rosh Arum would be somebody who is Machria other people in his ways. Now, there's a lot of different explanations what that means. Rashi says it means that he tells other people, look what I do and follow my ways. Now, all he's doing, he's not doing that because he's sincere, he's genuinely a tzaddik, and he wants people to learn from his ma'asim tovim. Rather, all he does, he's not in Tosfos Kabbara, he's a hypocrite, and he's acting in a way like to make people think well of him, and meanwhile he's doing averus, he's doing disgusting averus behind the scenes, and banking on that nobody's going to notice because he's passing himself off as a great tzaddik. And a paragon for other people to follow. That's Rashi. Marshal says another possibility of another meaning of Machriya Acherim Barchoisav. He gives other people advice where he has an agenda. He has his own axe to grind. He makes it look like he's giving benefit for the other person's advice, and really he's doing it only in order to bring about benefit for himself. Iyun Yaakov says yet another possibility. It can mean he did something crooked, and now the result is now he's embarrassed about it. So now he goes and causes somebody else to do the same thing. So that way either he'll get out of trouble, or at least that he won't look as bad as compared to the other person. H. Yosef says, and yet another possibility is that he thinks badly of what other people do. You know, as the famous expression goes, you know, your fellow person is your mirror. Whatever you see in him is really what's in you. So Machriya Acherim Baruch Yosef means he thinks badly of other people because he himself is not such a good person. So all of those are various explanations of Machriya Acherim Baruch Yosef. Rav Zrika Amar Rav Huna, here's another one. Zam Mekel Atzmei Machmer L'Acherim. He's Mekel for himself in matters of halacha, and he's Machmer for others. So again, like he's putting himself out of name. Look how careful he is in mitzvahs, but meanwhile he's using it only to hide the fact that he's Mekel for himself and doing whatever he feels like. So that's another example of a Rosh Arum. Ula Barav Omar, and the seventh one, Ula Barav says, another case of a Rosh Arum, Zeshakorav Ashona, Veleshimish Tamar Chachamim. He learnt Mikra, he learnt Tanakh, and he learnt Mishnayas, but he did not serve Tamar Chachamim, and therefore he did not learn he did not learn Talmud, namely the Svara of the reasons behind the Mishnah. Now, the problem is, Rashi goes and explains in detail over here, the Mishnayos only give you the bare halachas. But the fact is, from that itself, you can't pass on halacha. Many times, we have to understand where does the din come from and what's the reasoning behind it, and based on that, the halacha is going to be applied differently in different cases. So shimush tamar chachamim means on one level it means where the person is physically serving his rebbe, and that he learns from his rebbe's midas tovus and whatnot, but he also learns the derech halimud and the way of thinking like a Torah yid should from his rebbe, and on another level, it means that he's learning from his Rebbe the mentality and the mindset of how to learn Mishnah and how to derive the details of the halachas. So now, if he doesn't do that, and he's only learning the Mishnah, then he's making himself. Everybody thinks that he's a great Talmid Chacham. Look how many halachas he knows, but meanwhile, he's a Rosh Ha'orum because he doesn't truly know how to. He makes it look like, and he himself actually believes that he's an expert in the reasons behind the halachas, and he's not. And people honor him as a Talmud Chacham, and meanwhile, he misapplies the halacha. The Itmar, as in fact we have a discussion about that point. If a person does that, he learns Mikra, he learns Mishnah, but he does not do Shimush Talmid Chachamim. So what would we call such a person? Rabbi Loza Omer, Omer Hareza Ama Oretz. So Rabbi Loza says we would call such a person an Ama Oretz, which has practical implications in halacha. It doesn't just mean we call him a name. Rashi points out, we find throughout Shas, and Ama Oretz is always suspect that he's not taking Meiser and Trumas Meiser properly from his produce, and that he's also suspect as far as matters of Tumah V'Tahara. In general, we say the Ama Oretz are considered Tomei D'Rabbanan, and their clothing is Tomei, and so on and so forth. So now this person who does not do Shimush Talmid Chachamim, then he's in the same situation. We can't trust him on Trumas and Maestros, and we can't trust him on Tumah V'Tahara. Because again, we have reason to think that he's not learning and applying the halachas properly. He's going based on the bare Mishnayos that he's learning, and he's not realizing the reasoning behind it. Marsha says at the end of the sugya over here, after we go through a number of different definitions in this regard about the importance of Shimush Talmid Chachamim, Marsha points out in the same vein, he says in our generations, you have the same problem. People learn halacha from the straight out Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch was first published when the Marsha was a boy. So, and at the time, of course, it wasn't printed with Nosi Kalim or anything. The Shulchan Aruch was actually meant to the Mechaber. He had written the Beis Yosef, a comprehensive Pirush on the Torah, which goes through and explains the reasoning and the sources and the whatnot of the halachas. And then he wrote the Shulchan Aruch was actually meant originally as more like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. It was meant as a handbook of halacha for the average person. In fact, the Beis Yosef originally divided into 30 sections. The intention would be you'd learn one section a day and you'd complete your review of the entire halacha once a month. But people were starting to use it in the Marsha's times. People were starting to use it to actually pass some practical halacha from. So Marsha says this is the same kind of problem. People are passing the halacha, in effect, from the Mishnah without knowing the reasoning behind it. Similar objections back, for example, when the Rif composed his Sefer Halacha, so he had similar objections to him. When the Rambam composed Yad HaZaka, he had similar objections. You have this back and forth throughout Jewish history that you have. On the one hand, people want to compose shorter Sifrei Halacha to make it easier for people to find the Halacha, but on the other hand, there's the tension with this that we're saying over here. You can't be Mora Halacha, Mitoch Mishnasan, and the result is that you have Nosi Kalim start developing around it to analyze it and find the sources and how to apply the halacha and so on and so forth, and then a few generations later somebody will need to compose a new summary, and then that one will eventually accrete Mephoshim and so on and so forth, and it repeats over and over periods of hundreds of years. You find, for example, the Maharil mentions in one of his Trovas that in his times there was a Rav in Germany who wanted to compose a summary of Hilchos Nida in Yiddish, Poshet, that people should be able to follow for day to day. And Maharil writes to him very sharply, based on this Gemara and other relevant Gemaras, that you can't do that. People need to know to ask a Rav. But on the other hand, the fact is, you have throughout Jewish history, there's the idea that people have done that, and they have in fact composed books and booklets like that, so that you know at least the basic halachas, and then from there you still need to know when to ask a rav. So Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is an example of that. So can you pass in halacha directly from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? Lav davka, but at least it gives you a basis. So, for example, Reb Shlomo Gansfried, who composed it, obviously he knew of this Gemara, he knew of this Marsha or whatever, but he felt it's still important. A person needs to have a basic handbook to at least begin to know what the halacha is. After that, then you need to know where it's necessary to ask the Rav. So the Gemara says, so again, Rabbi Lazar had said that a person is caught up a shana without Shemesh Tamar Chachamim, then he's an Am Haaretz. Rabbi Shmuel Ben Nachmeni Omahare is a boor. Rabbi Shmuel Ben Nachmeni goes further and says he's a boor. Now the difference is, as we have in Pirkei Avos, Ein Boor Yirei Chet, V'loy Am Haaretz Chosid. A boor is somebody, an Am Haaretz doesn't know Torah, but at least he has Midas Torahs. A boor doesn't even have that. So therefore, the Mishnah says that a boor can't be a Yirei Chet. How could he fear sin when he doesn't even have Midas Toivus? And Am Haaretz at least can fear sin. He just he can't be a Chosid. He can't throw the Fnim Mishuras Adin, because how could he do that if he doesn't know what the Dinim are? So therefore, Rav Shmuel Ben Nachmeni is going further and saying this person, even though you would think he's Shtikl Tamar Chacham, he learned Mikra, he learned Mishnah, but he doesn't bother with Shimush Tamar Chachamim, then he's a boor. He's lacking everything, even Midas Toivus. Rabbi Yana Omar is a kusi. Rabbi Yana goes further and says he's like a kusi. Where the implication in halacha with that, Rashi points out, you wouldn't be allowed to eat his bread, just like you're not allowed to eat bread made by kusim. You're not allowed to drink his wine. For hundreds of years, there was the question whether the kusim are oivdei avodah zarah, were they proper gerim? We know they were brought to Eretz Yisrael by Santa Cherev, and then the Pasuk says over there how they were worshipping their getchkes and lahavdol, they were worshipping Hashem also. Did they eventually become true gerim or not? It's machloikas throughout Shas. Eventually, in the times of Mayor, they found that they're worshipping Avodah Zarah, and then they declared them Goyim Gmurim. So at that point, then you're not allowed to eat from their bread, just like you're not allowed to eat bread baked by a Goy, Pasachum, and you're not allowed to drink their wine for the same, because Yayin Nesef. So now, the same way, this person who doesn't do Shimush Tamar Chachamim, that means Rashi says he's not being careful with Dibre Chachamim, so he's only trying to show himself off as a Tamar Chacham, so therefore you got to be careful with his bread and his wine. You never know what he did with it. The Maharal makes a point as well. One thing is, we know that the Kosim, similar to the Tzedukim, believed only in Torah Shebichsav. Well, this person, in effect, is treating the Mishnayos like Torah Shebichsav. The Mishnayos are supposed to have their own Torah Shebaal Peh to go with them, which is the Gemara, to understand what the Mishnayos are saying and when to apply this halacha and when to apply that halacha. Well, if he doesn't believe in that, if he doesn't hold of it, then he's treating the Mishnayos the way the Kosim are treating Torah Shebichsav. Rav Acha by Yaakov Maharizik Amgush. Rav Acha by Yaakov says, going further, he's like a magician. So he's a magician, pretends like he's doing magic and fooling people, and this guy is doing the same kind of thing. Omer of Nachmitz from Sabra Kavased Rav Acha by Yaakov, of all these possibilities, is Yama Oretz or a Kusi or whatever, it's most reasonable to say, like Rav Acha by Yaakov, that he can be considered like a magician. The Amri Inshi, because they have like a popular expression, Rotin Magusha Vola Yoda Ma Rotin, the magician mumbles his words. He says his magic spells and he doesn't know what he's saying. Magic spells aren't always supposed to make sense. He says abracadabra or whatever spells he says, and he knows that's what he learned, that's what he's supposed to say without meaning what he's saying. Similarly, Tony Tana v'lo yoda ma Tony, the same way, many times a Tana will be teaching Mishnayos. We don't mean a Tana like the Tanoim of the generations of the Mishnah. We mean a Tana of the time of the Amoraim who would repeat over Mishnayos and Braisis and the Beis Medrash v'lo yoda ma Tony, and many times he doesn't know what he's teaching, as we find many times in Shas, where it'll say Tony Tana kamei d'reb, whoever, that a Tana is teaching a Braisa in front of a certain Rosh Hashiva, and he quotes a Braisa, and the Rosh Hashiva points out to him that this Braisa can't possibly be correct, and you got it mixed up, and so on and so forth. So therefore, so he's similar to a magician in that he's just saying words without really understanding what they mean. And Maharal also makes a point, the idea being, Torah, after all, I mean, Flamayla Mitam Badas, but on the other hand, we're supposed to absorb it with our Seichel. So now when this person treats the Mishnayos as something you don't need to know with your Seichel, it's just this is how it is, this is how it's written, and you don't need anything further than that, then he's treating it kind of like a magic spell where you don't need to understand what it means, and it's Flamayla Mitam Badas. So therefore, that's the problem. So, having mentioned an Am Haaretz, the Gemara goes into the various definitions of what an Am Haaretz is. So we have a Gemara over here that has definitions of an Am Haaretz. We have a Gemara in Pesachim that says very harsh things about an Am Haaretz. Tosfos discusses over here at some length, there are definitely different degrees of Am Haaretz. You have an Am Haaretz of the type that's mentioned in Pesachim, for example, where it mentions there is posel la'edus, and there's even a case describes over there, you're even allowed to kill him on Yom Kippur, because they were talking about an Am Haaretz who's not just Sam an Am Haaretz, he doesn't know Torah, but he's actively harmful, as he is in Moser or whatever. So you definitely have different degrees of Am Haaretz. But here the Gemara is going to be discussing the kind of milder Amorim, the kind who's suspect about Taras and Trumas and Maestris, and where we have to consider anything he touches is Tomei, how do we define, what is the definition of an Amorim for that purpose? So Kol Shein Akur, Krishma, Shachas, V'Avis, V'Vichisah, Divir Rebbe Eliezer, Rebbe Yeshua, or a mayor. So the first definition is, if he doesn't say Shema in the morning and the evening. Meaning, in other words, these Tanoim, Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yeshua, or the Girsa in the printed Gemara, the mayor, says, once he says Krishma morning and evening, that at least takes him out of the category of a total Amoritz. It means he knows Epis of Torah. Marsha points out there's actually a relevant Gemara. There's actually a relevant Gemara on this in Menachos that says, you know, like this, the Torah says, "Well, gisa bo yom and balayla." The minimum amount that a person needs to be yotze learning Torah by day and by night is to say Krishma in the morning and the evening. Now, the Gemara says that you shouldn't tell that to the Amei Oretz because then they're going to think, "Oh, well, then we don't need to learn Torah at all." But nevertheless, the fact is that if he says Krishma, then at least he's out of the category of a total Amei Oretz. So that's the first definition. And Marsha, by the way, also mentions over here that another possibility would be that the Gemara mentions in Brochas that you're not allowed to have an Amoret join in a Mizuman. And the Gemara has this similar discussion over there about how we define an Amoret. So that's part of what's in the Nafkamina of it over here. It's not only as far as Hilchos Tum of Atara and Alochas of Dmai and of Maestris, it's also relevant if you want to make a Mizuman. Nowadays, Lamaisa, where we pretty much include everybody in a Mizuman, where we don't have necessarily Amoret of the type that they had then. In general, every Yid Shomer Torah Mitzvah knows at least a Shtickle Torah, and besides that, you have the issue of Eva. You have, if you openly tell the person, "We don't want you to join the Mizum," and then that creates more sinner between Jews. A Nochri? I'm not sure about that. The Gemara talks about it in Brachos. I think that, no, the Halacha is that, no, a Goy can't be the third one. No. I'm not familiar with that. I'm just learned what? In Shalosh Prokim or in Parakach, I'll do an eye in that. I don't know. You also show me later. The Mishnah says that you can't even have a Nochri, and the Gemara explains even more of a Leitovel. So, okay, you'll also show me afterwards. I don't know. Okay. Anyway. So that's the first definition. The Chum say, even if he says Shema, but if he doesn't wear tefillin, that still brands him as an Amoritz. Why is that? First of all, Marsha points out, it says tefillin right there in Krishma. And we know if a person says Krishma without wearing tefillin, then he's made Edus Shek of Atzma. It's like he's testifying about himself, that he's lying. What do you mean? You're saying, Chautam lo is al yodecha, and you're not actually wearing the tefillin al yodecha and bein enecha. So therefore, if he says Krishma, but he doesn't wear tefillin, then the Chum are saying that still brands him as an Amoritz because it means that his saying Krishma itself is incomplete. I'm pretty sure the Mishnah says you can't count a goy, but I don't know. We'll look at it later. Another point is as well, because we know the famous Medrash, Kaimu Mitzvah Tefillin, Amalni Ani Alechem, Kilatim Yigei Maturi, Yem Velayla, in the Bar Mitzvah Maimah. So therefore, if the person doesn't bother putting on Tefillin, then he's not even trying to get himself the schus of learning Torah. So therefore, the Chum said for that, we can call him an Amoritz. Next, Ben Azai, I'm a Kol Shein Tzitzis B'Vigdoy. Ben Azai says another definition of an Amoritz would be where he doesn't wear tzitzis on his clothing. Now, again, Marsha says, the fact is, we have tzitzis is mentioned in Krishma, so again, if he's not wearing it, then it shows his Krishma is incomplete. And the other explanation is, because tzitzis is also, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, that it's shokul connected to Kolachara Kola, it's equal to all the other mitzvahs, which is why it has Gematria 613, so therefore, if he doesn't wear tzitzis, then it shows that he doesn't care about the other mitzvahs either. Reb Yonis and Bar Yosef Oimer, Mish Komi Sheshved Bonim, Venim Gadlon Latamud Torah. Reb Yonis and Bar Yosef says the definition of an Amoritz for this purpose would be he has children and he doesn't raise them to learn Torah. So fine, he himself maybe didn't have the opportunity to learn when he was younger, but at least he should be sending his children to Cheder to learn Torah, and if he doesn't, then that brands him as an Amoritz. Again, Marsha points out, the point is, that's also in Krishma, so if he's not doing it, it shows that his saying Krishma itself is insincere. The Maharal goes into a discussion over here. He says each of these, again, is talking about like a further and further makif out from a person. First you have the person himself, that whether he's makabel o malchus shemayim or not with Krishma. Then we talk about wearing tefillin, which is on the outside of him, to l'shabed alei v'amoyach. Then we have tzitzis, which is on his begodim, which is outside of his body. And then we have his children, which is further out than him, but still, like, one of his makifim, and he doesn't care to raise them for Torah. So, like, each one is saying a further and further out thing, where nevertheless, he doesn't do it, and that's a problem. Even if he does the things that are closer to him, but he has to be doing the things that are respectively further and further away. Achirim, remember, Achirim say, Achirim usually being your mayor, afilu korav ashonav leshimish tamid hachamim, like we said in the previous piece, even a person learned Mikra and learned Mishnah, but he does not mishamish tamid hachamim, so he didn't learn the methodology of Gemara, hazeu amaretz, then also he can be called an amaretz. Korav leshona, what happens if he's on an even lower level, he learned Mikra, but he never even learned Mishnah, harez a boor, then he's a boor, then he's even less than an amaretz, and he has no midas tovis at all. And if he doesn't do anything, he hasn't learned Mikra or Mishnah, all of our Kosev Omer, this is the kind of person that the Pasuk describes him, that Hashem promises, Zera Odom Zera Behema. I will sow the house of Yisrael, I mean the Aseres HaShvatim, and the house of Yehuda, the Shvatim of Yehuda and Binyamin, with the seed of man, the descendants of man, and the descendants of animals. Meaning it was this person who doesn't even bother with Mikra or Mishnah or anything, he's on the level of an animal. Maharsha points out the context of the Pasuk is actually talking about in favor of the Jewish people, that Hashem, the Targum translates on the Pasuk over there, that Hashem promises that Lo Asid Lavei, Hashem will make them successful and numerous and growing large in numbers like the way flocks of animals do. But here the Gemara is kind of taking it kind of out of context and saying that it's saying a negative thing. You have Jews who are on the level of Zera Adam, and then you have lower level ones who are on the level of Zera Behem. Ion Yaakov says in a way it can still be said as a positive thing that even those ones, even the Burim, even the lower level Jews, the ones who are like a behemoth, nevertheless Hashem still promises that he's going to help them be successful and increase and grow. So it works in context to the Psukim as well. And of course there's the idea that those Zera behemoth can be transformed into Zera Adam, so yeah. Anyway, the idea being, in other words, if he's not using a seichel the way he's supposed to be, then in what way is he better than a behemoth? Similarly, so now the Gemara continues. Here's another drasha on the subject of the importance of not just learning Mishnah, but of shimush tamar chacham, of learning the methodology of Gemara as well. A pasuk says in Mishlei, Yiroas Hashem b'ni v'melech, my son, fear Hashem and the king, v'im shonim al tis'orav, and don't get involved with shonim. Now, the simple meaning of shonim, various mefoshim, talk about on the psukim over there, is it means people who are rebellious against the king, people who try to change the Torah, people who try to change the form of government and rebel against the king, etc. The Alter Rebbe during the time when he was during one of his arrests in Petersburg, they asked him he had to write a whole bunch of answers to questions that they were asking him, and one of them was that he said they asked him that you have it seems from various places in Chassidus that for example the Baal Shem Tov says don't be afraid of anybody except for Hashem, so how does that fit with the concept of having respect and fear for a king? So the Alter Rebbe explains that no, the fear of a king is tantamount to the fear of Hashem. And he quotes this pasuk and explains it to them, shonim means people who would say that there's a difference between the yira of Hashem and the yira of a king. They would say there's yira of Hashem you have to have, yira of a king we don't care for, and the pasuk is saying, no, don't get involved with such shonim, the fact is they're on an equal level. But here the Gemara is going to understand, rather, that the word shonim is Meloshon Mishnah. So it means, this refers to people who are just repeating over halachas without shimush tamar chachamim. So again, it's the same problem that we've been discussing so far, where therefore they don't truly know the meaning and the application of the halachas, and they end up misapplying them. Maharsha explains that, in other words, the words b'ni v'melech, now the simple meaning you would understand, yiros Hashem b'ni, my son, fear Hashem, v'melech, and fear the king. But now, Maharsha says, another meaning of it is this is Shlomo talking to his own son, Rechavam, who's going to succeed him as king, and telling him, even though you're Bni and you're Melech, so you're my son, and you're going to be the king. So fine, you won't be a boor, but at least though, still, it's not enough for you to be learning Mikra and Mishnah, the form of Mishnah that they had in his times. Make sure that you also are associated with people who are shonet, who are mishamish tamar chachamim, so that im shonim atisarav, don't get involved with the people who think that just Mishnah, just learning the basic halachas is enough. Make sure that you associate with the people who understand the importance of shimush tamar chachamim. So the Gemara says, Pshita. Well, isn't that obvious? Yeah, what else would the pasuk mean? Now, apparently the Gemara doesn't like the explanations that we were saying before, the pshat explanations about shonim meaning rebels or people who want to make distinctions or whatever. So the answer is, Ma'u detema, my shonim, shonim b'chet. Without Rabbi Yitzchok's Drosha, you could say that shonim has yet another meaning. It means where they repeat, as in they repeat the same Aveira. So maybe Shlomo is warning Rechavam, and warning his Talmidim, don't associate with people who repeat Aveiras, because then they're going to get it's going to get embedded into them, and you're going to end up learning from them. Namely, in that case, Shlomo would be warning Rechavam and all of us about the point that Rav Huna said. Once a person does an Aveira and repeats it again, then it becomes mutter to him. And the Gemara says, what do you mean? Hutra lo, he's talking about it. What do you mean? It becomes mutter, it's still also. Ela ema nasis like a heter. It means it feels to him like a heter. Because once he did it twice already, then that his psychological guard is down, and now he feels it's much easier to do it again and again. Famous verse from Rabbi Cyril Salanter that I think I've quoted before in this year. He says, and if a person does the Aveda three times, then already he starts thinking that it's a mitzvah. The Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya, you know, he brings from the Zohar that once a person has done an Aveda three times, it's like the stain has penetrated through from one side of the garment to the other. So therefore, once the person has done the Aveda twice already, he's very much more susceptible to doing it a third time. So you could argue that shonim means that people who still do the same Aveda twice stay away from them. So Kamash Malan, therefore, Rabbi Yitzchok wants to tell us that's not the meaning of the pasuk. The meaning of the pasuk is rather, as he's saying, that it means people who learn halachas only without learning the reasons behind them, without the shimush tamer chachamim. Now, the Rif points out, what forces Rabbi Yitzchok to give that drasha? Why not Taka refers to the people who do Averis twice? And the answer is, he says, because if it's that they do the Averis twice, after all, they could do tshuva. And if we're talking about the person who didn't do tshuva, you don't want to be associated with the person who did an Aveira once either. So therefore, he doesn't like to explain that it would mean shoshonim b'chet, and therefore he prefers to understand that it's shoshonim halachas. There's a vort also, by the way, why every time the Gemara brings this explanation of Rav Huna about Kivin Sha'ovra Adam Aveira, every time it does the same thing. It quotes the version Hutra Loi, and it asks, what do you mean Hutra Loi? And it gives the answer, Nasus like a heter. Why does the Gemara do that? Why doesn't it just say straight, why doesn't it quote Rav Huna's statement straight out the correct way the first time? Kivin Sha'ovra Aveira Vashonaba, Nasus like a heter. And so there's a vort on that because the very fact that you say it in such a surprising way, and that makes the person, wait a minute, how could you possibly say that? That itself causes that now when you get the answer, it sinks more into your head and you realize that this is taka a true thing, as opposed to if you just said it straight out, not just like a heter, then you wouldn't feel it, you wouldn't feel this point as deeply. The Gemara continues, Tony. We learn in a braisa, ha-tanoyim mevale olam. Tanoyim, and again, we don't mean the tanoyim as in like the generations before Rebbe. We mean the tanoyim, the ones who were the living svarim and the bate medrash, and would quote the braisas and explain them, mevale olam. They destroy the world. The mevale literally means they wear out. So the Gemara says, mevale olam, talk about that. What do you mean? They destroy the world. They're teaching Torah. Amar Rava or Rabina, the same problem that we've been talking about all this time, Shemurin Halacha Mitesh Mishnasan, where they think they know the Halachas, because they know the Mishnayas and the Braises, and therefore they think they can pass in Halacha from that, but the fact is that they're making a mistake because they don't really understand the reasoning behind it, and therefore they end up misapplying the Halacha. Again, it actually explains, for example, they compare a case in a Mishnah to a different case and don't realize that there's an important difference between them. Sometimes we have, the Gemara will tell us that a certain Mishnah is only like one Tana and the Halacha is not like them. Also, the ones who teach Mishnayos and Braises, they may have many times in a Mishnah or a Braise, you can have different opinions, and the Mishnah very rarely tells us who the Halacha is like. And even when it does, we don't always follow it. So in short, they don't really know what the bottom line Halacha is, and therefore they end up making mistakes, and therefore they destroy the world. So that's, again, we know, in Gemara terminology, the word Tana has two different meanings. It means the Chachamim of the times of the Mishnah, beginning from the Anshe Knesset Gadol or whatever, all the way down until the times of Rebbe, and then you have the Chachamim of Rebbe's generation who are like half Tanoim, half Amoroim, like Rav Chiya and Rav. We're not talking about them. What we mean is in the times of the Gemara, throughout Shas, we'll always have Toni Tana Kamei de Ploini. It's Machloikas, by the way, it's Machloikas we've shown him, whether Rebbe wrote the Mishnah or whether he composed it, but it was still Baal Peh. The Rambam consistently writes that that Rebbe wrote the Mishnah. Rashi consistently writes that he was Masader it, but apparently it was still Baal Peh. Either way, even if it was written, apparently they didn't have very many copies of it. Remember, this is long before printing. So in the yeshivas, they would commonly have that a Tana, you would have a Tana who was somebody who had a great memory, and he would go and repeat over a Braisa in the Beis Medrash, and then they would start analyzing it. But as we said before, many times, so sometimes these Tanoim are genuine Talmid Chachamim, and they don't just memorize the Braisas, they also worked on Shimush Talmid Chachamim, and they know the reasoning behind it and so forth. But sometimes, we're saying, sometimes they would just be, like they just rattle it off without knowing the full import of what they're saying, and that's what the Gemara is criticizing over here. So now, if they mistakenly find, so before we were saying that it's bad enough, they're like magicians, they're just mumbling their spells and not knowing what they are. Now we're saying even further that if such a person thinks of himself bigger than he is, and he thinks he is capable of passing halacha, because he knows so many mishnayos and braisos, then we're saying that's not only a mistake, such a person wears out and destroys the world. And the reason is because he passes halacha wrongly. So, Tani Nami Hochi, we learned similarly in the Braisa. Omer Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yeshua, V'chima Vale Olam Heim. What do you mean that Tanoim destroy the world? Vale Miyashva Olam Heim. Aren't they the ones who cause the world to be settled? Shenema Halichos Olam Loy. As the Pasuk says, the ways of the world are his. And as we know, as we say in Davening Al Tikri, Halichos Ela Halachos. So people who know and learn and teach Halachos are a very good thing. Ella, the problem is, Shemur and Halacha, Mitzvah Mishnasan, they pass in Halacha based exclusively on the Mishnayos and Braisos without using Gemara, without using Shimush Tamar Chum analysis, without ever having bothered to learn that, and therefore they end up Medam and Milsa Milsa. They try to compare one thing to another, and they end up going wrong. And again, here's where Marashal says, you have the same kind of problem, for example, with passing out of straight Shulchan Aruch. Which is why, in the generation after Marashah, they started writing Noisa Kalim on the Shulchan Aruch, and eventually, therefore, the Shulchan Aruch Taka becomes like Mishnah together with Gemara. When the Alter Rebbe wrote his Shulchan Aruch, actually the intention was to begin with to have it as a combination of Mishnah and Gemara, to have halachas b'tamei, and to have not just the bare halachas, but to explain the reasoning, how we arrive at this halacha. And so therefore, so that doesn't have the problem of the original Shulchan Aruch. But nevertheless, again, you know, you do have, from then until now, from the time of the Rif, really, until now, you have this, like I said, this constant thing where a Chacham will write a summary of an area of Halacha, or even of all of the Halachas, like the Rambam did, let's say, and the Chacham, his generation, will argue that's the same problem, Shemur and Halacha, Mitzvah Mishnasan, and eventually Noisa Kalim will develop around it, and then the cycle repeats over and over. Pista, quoting from the Mishnah. So the Mishnah had mentioned another example of Rabbi Yeshua had said, the kind of people who destroy the world is Isha Prusha Vahola, of a woman who's Porush. So meaning in other words like this, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua had pointed out that women like Tiflus, which we said means, Tiflus means like being frivolous and not always being serious and having a physical and an emotional relationship with their spouse. So now Rabbi Yeshua says that when a woman is an Isha Prusha and she's going against her nature, or in particular, as we're going to say in the Gemara over here, she's pretending to go against her nature and really using it only as a cover for things that she's doing in secret. So that's another kind of person who destroys the world. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, expanding on that point, Besulat Salyonis, an unmarried girl who's a Salyonis, Salyonis, Meloshim, the Aramaic word for davening, is Sali, so Salyonis means who's constantly davening. So the idea would be that, in other words, yeah, women have to daven, but when she's constantly davening, then she's using it as a cover for other things that she's doing that are less proper. Tosfos discusses over here and brings a girsa, the word is not salyonis, but rather tzaimonis, which is constantly fasting. And one idea of that is constant fasting can cause a woman to lose her besulim. Now, therefore, she'll claim that, you know, she'll claim that that's how she lost them, and meanwhile she's using it as a cover for znus, which is the real way that she lost them. Anyway, v'almona shevavis. Another one is an almana who is shevavis. Now, the word shevavah in Aramaic means neighbors. So Rashi describes that she's always going and visiting the neighbors. That can be another problem. The Oruch gives a couple of other explanations. Valmona Shegovis, one of them is that she's out in the street a lot, especially in those times, it was very uncommon for that for women, so therefore it means there's something the matter with her behavior. And he says another meaning of Shegovis is that she pretends that she's constantly doing tshuva. Anyway, so the cotton shall kolole chadoshev and a premature child, which the Gemara will define later on what that means. These are all people who cause the world to be worn out and destroyed. So the Gemara says, Amy, so you're telling me there's something wrong, for example, with a girl who davens a lot, and with an almana who goes out in the streets a lot, for example. Va'am Rabbi Yechanan, and Rabbi Yechanan points out, Lamanu yirashet mebesula, we can find an example of yirashet from the example of a certain unmarried girl. The kibul schar me'almana, and we can understand a particular detail about how Hashem rewards a person for their mitzvahs from an example of an almana. Namely, Rabbi Yechanan himself had dealings with such people, and he said that from them you can learn a lesson. Namely, one time he overheard an unmarried woman who fell on her face. She was davening to Hashem. V'omra, she said, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Barosa Gan Eden, Barosa Gehenim. You created Gan Eden and Gehenim. Barosa Rishoyim, Barosa Tzadikim. You created Rishoyim who are going to wind up in Gehenim and Tzadikim who are going to wind up in Gan Eden. Of course, as we know, the Alter Rebbe points out, Tzadik, Barosa, like Palma, so it means people who have tendencies to one or the other. Anyway, may it be your will, Hashem, that people should not be nichshol in me. Meaning, in other words, that she wants that. So Maharsha says she knew on herself. She knew that she's capable of controlling her yetzahara. Even though she's not married yet, she's capable of controlling her yetzahara for znus. But she's concerned that other men might that there are men around her who might not. They might be ma'anis her, and they're going to get punished. And the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that when a yid is punished because of another one, then the first one because of whom he was punished is not brought in mimchitzose shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So she's concerned about that, and therefore she's davening that she shouldn't be the cause of somebody else to stumble. And Rabbi Yochanan is saying this is a very good thing. You can learn from her that there's a proper way to daven. Even Yaakov points out another point as well. Akol bidei shemayim, chutz miyiras shemayim. So she can't really daven that she herself shouldn't be nichshol, because that's up to her. That's up to her bechira. But she can daven that Hashem should help that other people's bechira should not go the wrong way. So that's an example. Kibul schar me'almana, and Rabbi Yechanan says you can learn an example of receiving reward from Hashem from the case of an almana. Dahi armalta dahavoy beit knishta b'shivavusa. There was a certain almana where there was a shul in her neighborhood. V'chol yoyma hava asio matzla b'medrash at Rabbi Yechanan. But every day she would come and daven in Rabbi Yechanan's beis medrash, which was a further walk away from her house. Amaloi tells her, Biti, my daughter, Loib Beis HaKnesses, Yesh B'Shivavosif, isn't there a shul in your neighborhood? Why are you walking all the way here? Amaloi, she answers him, Vyevi V'Loi Tzchar P'siyas Yeshli, isn't there the Tzchar of walking? The very fact that you walk to do a mitzvah is itself something that deserves a Tzchar. And Rabbi Yechanan says, you know what, she has a point. And this is a very good thing we learn, the concept of Tzchar P'siyas. There is a concept of Zrizin Makdim in the mitzvahs, but there is also the concept against that of Tzchar P'siyas, that a person does deserve a greater reward for putting themselves to greater effort to go and daven in a further away shul. And this is Taka Burat, La Halacha. One thing is, also, you know, like this, you're not supposed to do mitzvahs for Tzchar, but one point is, when a person, the mitzvah itself, you can't do for Tzchar, or you shouldn't do for Tzchar, but to do the extra effort that you put into that, for that you're allowed to have in mind the Tzchar, and she's doing that. So therefore, so we see that Rabbi Yechanan is saying that you have a good example of a Basula who's davening and an Amona who's walking around, and these are very good things indeed. Why is the Braisa saying that they're Mevale Olam? And the answer is Kikamirin Gun Yuchni Basvitifi. No, the kind of case we're talking about, that they're Mevale Olam, is an example like a woman named Yuchni Basvitifi. Rashi describes she was an Amona, she was also a Machshefa. So what happened is when a woman in her neighborhood was about to give birth, this Yuchni would use Kishuf to cause her womb to be stopped up so she can't have the baby. Now she's in tremendous labor pains, and when things are getting critical, then she would put on a face like she says she's the local tzedekas. You know what? Let me go and daven for this woman, and maybe Hashem will help her. Meanwhile, she goes and secretly undoes her Kishuf, and therefore and then the baby is able to be born. One time, Rashi describes, one time this Yuchni had a worker doing some handiwork, or was a handyman doing some work around her house. Meanwhile, she had gone to the Yeletus's house. This worker, while he's doing work around her house, Rashi says he heard a keli that this Yuchni had in her house, and he heard some banging around in the keli. So he was curious what it was. He opens up the keli, and the kishuf flies out. So now the whole secret is spilled that all this time she'd been using kishuf for this. So therefore, so now when we have somebody like that who puts on a face like she's a tzaddikus and really in secret she's doing kishuv, then this is the kind of thing we're saying that mevalei olam, where they put on a face like being tzaddikim and really they're the opposite. I know whether it exists today, I don't know, but I mean, you have other kinds of hypocrites nowadays, so then it's all, you know, not necessarily with kishuv, but with other kinds of things like that, where a person pretends to be a good person, and then it turns out that they're not, and it creates a chilul Hashem and so forth, and, you know, the mice in b'chol yom, unfortunately, you have it every, you have such things every so often in the headlines, with both men and women, by the way, just the Gemara seems to be saying such things, at least in their times, were more commonly found by women, maybe because women were more often around the house all day, and therefore they had more of a chance to hide their nefarious deeds, whereas men are mostly about and out and about working, and they have less of an opportunity for it. But yeah, this kind of thing we'll find with both men and women. Kishuv, I don't think there is true kishuv nowadays, but who knows? There's a sicha, by the way, where the Rebbe talks about this Yuchni Basir Tivi, and points out the name Yuchni itself is Meloshim Chen, and also the Gemara tells us, for example, in Brachas, that a person sees Rabbi Yochanan in a dream, and Yochanan has a nun in it, it's a Nisim Nasuloi, so therefore she called herself by the name Yuchni, as if also to imply that there's Chen and there's Nisim involved with her and really anything but. Actually, the Orach HaSholem brings an interesting point. He says, you know, before we had the expression, the Gemara had said about the magician, Rotin Magusha, that he mumbles his spells without really knowing what he means. So he says, maybe in this case, where she was casting spells as well, maybe the name is not really supposed to be Yochni Basirati V with a vase, maybe it's really supposed to be Basiratini, as in Yochni, the one, the woman with the spells. Yomi and Mashiach Ogola. Yesterday I'd done actually the one for Chotessi here, so we'll go back now and do the previous one. So La'asid Lava, Molar Zeyes Hashem. And that means when the Pasuk says, Kamayim La'yom Machasim, like water covers the seabed, even by the Umas Ha'olam, the Rambam explains that the whole occupation of the world will be Ladas Hashem Bovad and Vahoysav Hashem Amlocha. Like this we usually understand that Lo Ye'esek Kol Ha'olam means the occupation of the entire Jewish world. Here the Rebbe is saying, it means the Goyim also on their level are only going to be looking Das Hashem. And the same thing, and everything else, and all the other parts of the world, Doimim, Semeach, and Chai, all of them are going to have Koyach HaPoyol B'Nifol. We have the famous thing that the Evan Nikir Tizak, as it talks about in Hayom Yom, that the stones will cry out and say, why just step on me without saying words of Torah? And the Te'ena, the Medrash says that La'osid Lava, a person is going to come pick a fig from a tree on Shabbos, the tree itself will yell out, don't, it's Shabbos today. So we see that there'll be a Koyach HaPoyol B'Nifol in trees as well, and how much more so in the Medaber. As we say in Rosh Hashanah, that every creature will know that Hashem created and made him, and every creature that has an neshama in its nose will say Hashem Elkei Yisrael Melech. So the whole world, in short, will be a Dira Lo Yisbarach Tatonim, and that will be the case. And throughout all the worlds of Bria Yitzira Asiya, will all have the level of gilui that now you have in Olam Atzilus. Continuing with halachos of Yom Tov, so here we have a din about mixing clay to seal up an oven. Okay, nowadays we don't seal up ovens with clay, so we'll skip that. In short, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. In general, most of the halachos that are also on Shabbos are also on Yom Tov. So that includes things like smearing clay. It would also include to put it in modern terms, playing with Play-Doh, for example. We'll talk about in the next halachas. As far as feeding animals, we'll talk about tomorrow. That's it.
Don't you bang clay?
What? No, the point is, it's memareach. It's megabel, and it's memareach. It's shaping. It's a tolda of memareach, of smoothing it out. You have the same problem, for example, with thick ointments that you can't put them on Shabbos or Yom Tov. And Yeshayim, that's also even from Malacha Seichel Nefesh, which is why you're talking about dinim over here involving sealing up an oven. But, you know, again, that's not a practical halacha nowadays, because we close up our ovens in other ways.